My name is Andres, and I'm an alcoholic. Hey, everybody. My sobriety date is 8/20/2009, and my home group is Jaywalkers. I have a sponsor, and I sponsor others when they ask me, I guess. It's been a long time, to be honest with you. Thank you, Alex, for speaking. You know, I love this program. I love AA. You know, when I met Alex, I just remember we were talking in the car, and like, he was just so, like, you know, ratchet, you know what I mean, when he first came in. But I can tell you, like, to see him grow and actually come in and start working and doing the deal, he's an absolute pleasure to be around, you know what I mean? And I mean that from the bottom of my heart. And it's just awesome what this program does for us, you know what I mean? And how grateful I am for that today, you know? I was born and raised in Homestead, Florida. I was born in like 1980 in Homestead, Florida. And I can tell you that as a child, I don't remember much of my childhood. And I don't remember much. What I first remember is Hurricane Andrew. I was going into the sixth grade at that time. And that's what I remember from being sober. I can only remember that. And it's not like I had a bad childhood, right? Like, I had a really great childhood. My family is really awesome. They were loving as they could be, you know what I mean? I know we all got that. And, you know, middle-class family. My dad's a CPA. He has his own little firm, his own little business. You know, I've always had stuff, you know what I mean? Like, anything I wanted or needed, they gave it to me. And I only say that because when I first came in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, I thought you had to be that drunk that was homeless, that lived underneath the bridge, that drank out of a paper bag, you know? That was my idea of an alcoholic. And so when I first came in, like, to the rooms, I thought that's what you had to be. And it turns out that you don't have to get that far, but there's got to be a feeling on the inside where you lose all hope, you know? And I had that desperation when I first came in the rooms. And I also say that because this disease does not care who you are. This disease does not care if you're white, black, in my case, Puerto Rican, gay, straight, bisexual, transgender. It doesn't care, you know? But it does one thing, that if you do got this, the only solution I've ever found for it is this, you know? And then, like our book says, you know, insanity or death, you know? And that's the deal if we don't start working the program. But, so Hurricane Andrew comes along. I don't know if you ever heard of that. But it kind of like wrecks Homestead, you know what I mean? Like kind of levels it, you know? And I remember we were in a little closet, probably from where those little black things are at about right here. And there was about 12, 15 of us in there crammed in. My dad was holding the doors and this other gentleman. And they were literally holding the doors because the wind was pulling the doors out. And they were holding up the doors for us. And I remember the roof on the top of that house would just lift up and just slam down and lift up and slam down. And the noise that hurricane made, it was like a freight train going through, just like, and it's just going so loud. And I talk about that because I equate that to the noise that was going on in my head before I picked up my first drink, you know. And that noise was just so loud. Another thing I mentioned about that is that things happened that day that did not make sense, right? Like, and this is where I know and I believe that there was a God at that point, even at such a young age. You know, for instance, like that roof never blew off that house, you know? My grandmother left the room one day, at that time, to go grab her jewelry, because that's all she had. She was born, like, you know, in the Depression era, and so she grabbed her jewelry, and like that section, as soon as she came back into the closet, that section of the house fell and the roof came off of that section. We had like this little hamster. I know it sounds silly. We had hamsters when we were kids. I like tormented my mom to get hamsters. So we had this hamster that had like 12 babies at the time, right before Hurricane Andrew. And like, it was like, we left the hamsters outside because there's no room for the hamsters, you know? And so my brother is in the closet and he feels something on his leg and he picks it up and it was like the male hamster and he put him on his shoulder and he stayed there the whole time. At one point, a gust of wind hits the house and the whole house smells like gas, propane gas. We had a gas stove. And at that point, I said, oh my God, we're going to die. And I just yelled out for help. God, please help us. And at that moment, a gust of wind came through the house, and it was lime. I smelled limes. We had a lime grove next door. And the smell of the gas had gone. And I knew, I was like, there's got to be something watching over me. Something out there watching over me. And the most interesting thing is, like, you know, the God that I came into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous with was a God that I was scared of. I was very fearful of that God. Walking in, I was thinking about it because it was storming outside and the lightning was striking. And when we were little, my grandmother used to say to me, you know, you hear that? The reason why that it's like that is because God is mad at you. And you're bad. Now, that sounds silly, but that stood with me until I came into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, and it still stays with me today. And as of late, I've had to change that idea of God. Because that God, that mean, fearful God, I couldn't get down with. You know what I mean? That God was not going to keep me sober for long. Okay? So, let's fast forward my first drink. I remember it like it was yesterday. I remember everything about it. I was 15 years old. I was sent on a trip to Europe. And before that trip, and there was this like letter that, I don't even know how this happened, because we were in high school, and the teacher got the school board to approve our parents to sign a letter that you can have two drinks with dinner, right? And I look about it now, it's like, that's so cool, but now I think about it now, like, how did she do that? You know what I mean? And so I could convince my parents were not going to sign that letter. And I, you know, the manipulators that we are, I manipulated them, said it's going to be okay, you know, and they signed it. You know what I mean? They signed it. And the funny thing is, I had never had a drink up to that point, but I knew two was not going to be enough. I don't know if anybody can relate to that. Not having a drop of alcohol, I knew that two was not going to be enough for me. So we go to this bar, it's me and this girl, and you know, I always sought out those people that knew how to do bad things. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know if anybody can relate to that. I just wanted to be like them. I wanted what they had. They just seemed like they were free. Like, you know, I had this noise going on in my head. I want people to like me because I'm a little bit awkward. I have glasses. I'm kind of like really skinny. I'm like 125 if I'm lucky. And, you know, just kind of pimply, you know what I mean? And just awkward. And then when you got that noise going on in your head, you're really awkward, you know? And we convinced the teacher to let us go by ourselves. I don't know how that happened either. I don't know how she's like, yeah, go ahead, get on the metro, go back to that place where we were at, you know, in Spain. You know what I mean? Like, no supervision. Okay, cool. But we knew where we were going. We were going back to this bar we had seen where we were at. And I didn't know what to order. We ordered two grappas, a shot of grappa. And I don't know if you all ever had grappa before, but it's not great. It's like the leftovers of wine, and it's just it's really kind of disgusting, actually, now that I think about it. I remember everything about that day. The bartender grabbing the bottle out of the fridge on top of the bar, the condensation coming off the bottle, the shots being poured. And I remember taking that shot, you know, and like feeling that feeling, like the alcohol going down your throat, going into your belly, warming it up, wanting to come back up, but you push it back down, you know. But what that drink did to me that day, it was like I could breathe again. It was like I took that drink and I was like, oh. And that noise in my head, it shut off. You know what I mean? I felt better, felt like I looked good, and, you know, felt all those things we say that the alcohol does, those effects produced by alcohol. And, you know, I catch that first buzz. You know what I mean? Y'all know what I'm talking about, that buzz. And I quickly wanted another shot, and I took that second shot, and I really had that buzz. And I was good. What I know now, what I know today, is that I chased that feeling for my whole drinking career, but I was never, ever able to catch it again. And what I know today is that what happens when alcohol touches my body, it sets off a mental obsession beyond my control, and I can't just stop at one or two. I need like 100. And sometimes 100's not enough. I'm that guy on the floor that clearly needs no more alcohol, but will ask somebody else to bring me something. You know what I mean? And set it right by me on the floor. You know? And I'm the drunk that drinks to black out. You know, I'm not going to lie. People say they didn't like the taste of alcohol. I love the taste of alcohol. You know what I mean? I just absolutely adored it. Or adored everything about it. You know? And that was my first experience with drinking. You know, in high school, I wasn't a real heavy drinker. My mom had a really tight rein on me. She tells me it's because she saw me in her, I guess, you know, and she knew all the tricks, you know, and I wasn't going to pull any fast ones on her. But when I did get out of the house and was able to drink, I drank alcoholically. There was no such thing as one or two. That didn't make any sense to me. I didn't have a lot of consequences in high school. Went to college. I went to the University of Florida. I got accepted there. And that's where it really took off for me with drinking. That's where it really took off for me. It's like, you know, Bill's story is like I had arrived. It was the first time that I was able not to be under the supervision of my parents. And I was able to do what I want, when I want it, and drink the way I wanted to drink, you know. And nothing really crazy happened in college either. You know, I by the grace of God, I pass. I don't know how that happened. You know, and it not beautifully. I mean, like straight C's. You know, nothing exciting. You know what I mean? Like the night before, cramming for a test with no dose. You know what I'm saying? Like just straight up like caffeine. You know what I mean? And I guess I was pretty smart because you know, I never went to class. Like who goes to class when you have to drink like we drink? You know what I mean? And you know. I joined Army ROTC. For some reason, I always wanted to be in the military. My dad was in the National Guard, and for some reason, like I always wanted to be in the military to serve my country. So I joined Army ROTC, and at college, when I look back, is that's when I start making every one of my decisions that I make is centered around alcohol. Every single one of them. So I joined Army ROTC, and I get involved in this club there that's a drill team. But the reason why I picked them is, one, because they had the best parties, and two, they went to Mardi Gras every year on student government's dime. And I was like, I'm sold. You know, I don't care what I have to do. I'm going to be a part of this group with these guys, you know, and gals. And it was kind of like a fraternity, and we drank a lot, you know. And in the Army, we drank a lot. Like, I mean, it was just like, you know, work hard, play hard. And I learned that at UF. And we joined this group. Like I said, every year we're going to Mardi Gras. We're having parties. We're drinking. You know, I learned how to drink very well. Didn't black out too much, but there was times that was kind of like brown out. You know, like all of a sudden I'm here and, ooh, where did she come from? Or, you know what I mean? Like, you know, where am I at? You know what I'm saying? Like, and it's just a little bit crazy. And in my case, it would be like, where did she come from? Whoa, where did he come from? You know what I'm saying? Like, it was just, that's just the way it was. And I pass. I graduate. I commission into the United States Army as a second lieutenant working on the Patriot missile system. Like, how did that happen? But even with that, I decide, you know, my first duty station to be Germany. And the only reason why I picked Germany, not because there's beautiful mountains and there's snowboarding and there's beautiful castles and culture, it's because I heard they have the best beer. You know what I mean? Like, and that's not so, like, that's why I chose it. And to get back where I had that first drink, for some reason I thought if I got there it would be the same, you know. And and it wasn't. It was just a lot of more. That's where I really learned how to black out. I found my drink to black me out. And once I did that, and a lot of the times it's because I was doing such shameful things that I just didn't want to remember, you know. And I didn't want to feel the way that I was feeling when I was sober. And I think you all can probably relate to that. Just that, like, you want to just come out of your skin. You know what I mean? Like, it's just everything just, you just can't get comfortable no matter what you do. But for some reason, when you take that drink, it's just like, you know what I mean? I can live. I go on a deployment, and this is where I kind of thought that maybe I had a problem. I go on a little deployment to Israel, and for all of you that maybe knows or don't know this, on deployment you kind of can't drink, you know what I mean? Like, they don't let you. And so, that didn't stop me though, but you know what I mean? But what ended up happening is I got a little bit away from the drink, and we're out doing this like exercise with the Israeli forces, and I'm at dinner. I get off post that we were on, and I go to dinner, and we're sitting at that dinner table, and they're like, let's order one bottle of wine. Now there's five of us, okay? There's, picture that, one bottle of wine for five people, right? And so they start pouring the glasses and like halfway fill. You're like, you know, like, oh, this is great. This is Israeli wine. It's really good. I'm like, whatever. I just want a drink. You know what I mean? And they start, like, you know. Do you know what I mean? Like, they start, you know, and I'm kind of like, you know, follow suit. And then I'm like, you know what I mean? And it's gone. It's gone, you know? And it's gone. Like, but then that's what I learned what happened was that I set off the mental obsession, all right? That one drop, that one half glass, and it starts going. I need another. What happens if I ask for another? Should I order another bottle? What will they think of me? You know what I mean? And it just goes and goes and goes. And I set that off. Thing is, I couldn't drink anymore. I was freaking miserable. You know what I mean? Like, I was miserable. And I also found out at that point that there's something wrong with me inside, right? Like, I just don't feel right. And at that point, I was kind of like, you know, maybe God, there's an answer there somewhere. So I was kind of seeking that, you know. And I thought maybe if I go to Israel, I'm here, right? I might as well go get baptized in the Jordan River like Jesus did. And like, maybe that just might make me feel better and I'll be fine. So, yeah, it's crazy. And so, you know, it's crazy. And so, I go on this trip to a kibbutz or whatever they're called, and we go there, and I get into like the Jordan River, and really all it was freezing cold water. The floor felt slimy and nasty. It smelled. He dipped me down. I came back up, and I'm like, I feel the same, you know? No different, you know? And I'm there. And I was hoping for this experience, you know, like God coming out of the sky, and you're forgiven, my son. And what I also know today is that it takes action, right? Faith without works is dead. That I can do a lot of things, but if I don't actually do the deal, you know what I mean? Like, nothing's going to change. This is an action program. And I didn't take any action from there. I kept on drinking. So, you know, like, Germany was a shit show. I get out of the army. I come to go into the civilian world. Oh, I picked up a hostage along the way. I pick up my wife, or my ex-wife. And, you know, I'm not proud of a lot of things there. I can tell you that I did things to that woman that no woman should ever have to go through. I can admit to that. I was not a good husband. Shocking, right? I know. But I was not a good husband. And, you know, I didn't beat her or anything like that, but, like, the mental abuse was just, you know, because I was so miserable. You guys, you know how I feel like towards the end? You were just so miserable. And you just want to make everybody around you feel miserable as you, you know? And God forbid they get in front of you in a drink, because they're going to really feel it, you know? And at the end of it, I'm in the financial advisor. I've become a financial advisor. I'm trying to open my business. And the market's crashing. We're in the worst recession since the Great Depression. You know what I mean? And I'm trying to build this business, and I'm drinking more and more. And it's getting worse and worse. And towards the end, I find out that my ex has a boyfriend. You know, like right around July 4th of 2009, before I got sober. And I was devastated, you know what I mean? Like, how can she do this to me, you know what I mean? Now, granted, I was not faithful at all, but it's like, who does she think she is? Does she know who I am? And now, mind you, I'm almost 200 pounds at this time, you know? My shirt is like the buttons are like almost seriously like breaking off, you know what I mean? And like, I smell of whiskey every night, you know? That was my choice of a drink. And we start going to marriage counseling. I'm like trying to pay bills, and I can't pay the bills. I can't see why I don't have enough money to pay these bills. You know, we make good money as I have a, you know, Crown and Coke in my hand, trying to pay the bills, and I can't figure out the two. You know what I mean? I'm taking money from her checking account and transferring it to mine so I can pay for all this. You know, just some ratchet, shady shit. You know what I mean? Like, just shady. But not letting her spend any of her money that she earned. You know what I'm saying? Like doing those things that we do just so we can get another drink, you know? And we go to marriage counseling. It comes to a point where the marriage counselor tells me, I'm never going to tell you to do something, all right? I'm just going to suggest, unless you really, I think you should do it. And so I had such resentment with this chick. Anyway, so we get in there, and my wife starts, like, commenting about my drinking. And the lady looks at me, and she's like, "You're an alcoholic." I'm like, "No, I'm not." She goes, I'm married to a recovering alcoholic. You're an alcoholic. You need to go to Alcoholics Anonymous." And I was like, "No, I don't." Because, right, what did I say in the beginning? Like, that alcoholic is the guy underneath the bridge, right? That's drinking out of a paper bag, you know what I mean? And our book clearly doesn't say that. I mean, it doesn't say that you need to be homeless underneath the bridge. You just got to have a real big bad problem with alcohol. And then even worse than that is spiritual malady. You know? You know, the counseling sessions become more and more about my drinking, and they're just bothering me about my drinking. I'm just like, and so you know what an alcoholic does when you get bothered by it? You just drink more. You know what I mean? And it got to the point that, our third year wedding anniversary was August 19th. I'm at work. At this point, we are going to marriage counseling. She said she stopped seeing the dude. I was okay with that. I'm at work. I have to pay the cell phone bill. And I print the cell phone bill at work. And I print it out, and it's like 50 pages. Now, the one they send you in the mail is just like kind of like 2 pages. This one was like a detailed records. And the number on there was his. Like pages of numbers. And I was devastated. You know what I mean? And I call her out on her shit, and she's like, whatever, you know what I mean? I'm sorry. And I'm like, like, okay, you know? And the grand scheme of things, like, you know, that week, even that week, I tried to stop drinking so much, you know, because we were going to marriage. I was like, maybe, I just had like a moment, maybe I do have a problem. And I hadn't talked to my parents at this point and about what was going on, you know? And I finally get on the phone with my mom, and I'm talking to her. And this is where God, I think, kind of starts putting people in my life. And he probably did that way before him. But I'm talking to mom, and she's just like, "You know, baby, how many of you had today?" And this is where I had my moment of clarity. And I said, "Just a couple, mom, just a couple." But I didn't have a couple. I was going on my fourth. And for some reason, I've lied to her for so many years, but that lie kind of stuck with me. And I felt bad about that. And she said, "Baby, why don't you go try that AA shit? You know, I hear it's for free." You know what I mean? And I'm like, you know, maybe. But I was too embarrassed. And so, like I said, I find out my wife's cheating on me and whatever. So the next day, I go into work. And I see my secretary. I just hired this girl, like, or this woman, like a month ago. So I come in. I kind of throw up on her. But not like literally throw up on her. I just kind of tell her everything that's going on in my life. And I'm saying, you know, this and that, and the drinking, and blah, blah, blah. And she goes, "You know, why don't you go try out the AA stuff? You know, my husband tried it out. It didn't work for him. It might work for you." It's like, I can't do that. She goes, "Why not?" I goes, "Well, I'm scared." And she's like, "Oh, stop being afraid. Go to your office, pick up the phone book, and call Alcoholics Anonymous." And back then, we still had phone books. Now you have the internet. And so I pick up that book, and I go to Alcoholics Anonymous, and I call the number, and this guy picks the phone, and he's working at intergroup doing service, and his name is Sarge, right? They call him Sarge. He was an old Vietnam vet. And the thing about it is, I met Sarge like 5 months before that moment. Okay, I was knocking on doors. Edward Jones, that I worked with, you knock on doors to get your business. And I met him knocking on doors. And the first time, he's like, "I ain't got no money." And I'm like, "Okay, no problem." But they always say, "Go back, you never know." So I go back to him, like, "Ah, I don't want to talk to this fucking guy." You know what I mean? So I go and knock on his door. And he's like, "Oh, it's just been a rough night." I'm like, "What's the deal?" And he's like, "Oh, I have a sponsee." And, you know, he went out and he relapsed. Been up all night and people drinking. I'm like, "Dude," you know what I mean? Like, "I'm just coming to say hi. I guess you ain't got no money. Bye." You know what I mean? But he picks up that phone and he tells me, he goes, "Go to this meeting. Tell them you're new, and they don't get afraid. They may turn that meeting around towards you, but just listen, all right? Just don't be afraid." And so I go in there, and the guy who's chairing the meeting, I'm like in a suit like this, and he's like shaved head and kind of like Terry, but he has more tattoos, you know what I mean? Like way more tattoos. And I'm just like, what the hell am I getting into? And it's a small dark room. It's a clubhouse. And he gives me how it works. And I thought he knew that I was new, even though I didn't tell him I was new. You know what I mean? It's all about me. And so I read how it works. I'm like, oh, okay, so this is how it works. I thought he was just giving me some like educational information here, you know, about how AA works. So the meeting starts, and it's a packed room, and they look at me, and the guy says something. He says, how it works. I look around at everybody. I'm like, and he looks at me again, and he goes, how it works. I'm like, what? He's like, read it. And I'm like, oh, I'm new here. And they're all like, yay! And I'm like, wow, this is like what cult did I walk into, you know? And so I read it, and I can tell you, I don't remember much of my first meeting, but I do remember one thing, I related. It was the first time in a long time that I had related to you, you know? And at that point in time in my drinking, I was drinking by myself, there was nothing pretty about that, but no one really wanted me around either, you know what I mean? Like, especially my ex, God, she hated me. And so it felt good for once to be somewhere where I was wanted. It felt good for once to realize that that there was a solution to what was going on with me. You know what I mean? It just felt good to feel good. You know, I saw you guys smiling and laughing, and I related, and I wanted that. And I was reading that, how it works, and you know, I saw step two. You know, that one's the one that sticks out to me the most. And it said, like, a God to restore me to sanity. And I didn't think I was insane. I thought everybody else was crazy, but I wasn't. And but what I learned soon after that, after about a couple of days without a drink, I'm absolutely out of my mind, right? This noise here comes back, you know what I'm saying? And if you're drunk like me and alcohol is your solution to life and you take that out to quiet the head, what is going to quiet your head now? You know, you need a solution. And that's what I found in the book. So things get a little bit crazy. The ex, like, basically takes separate vacations. The ex takes off. She says that she can't do this anymore. And I'm like, okay, whatever. And make a long story short, I end up 2 weeks sober, no job, no wife, no home, on my brother's couch, you know, in Orlando, Florida. And I woke up, like, Labor Day weekend, and I was like, you know, that loneliness they talk about in the book, and I was just like, what am I going to do now? And my friend had gotten sober in college, and I ended up calling him up and talking to him, and he kind of like helped me out seriously in the beginning, and he had like 6 years at the time. And it's funny how God works in our lives, you know. He was my running buddy in college, and like, we were best friends. I was so mad at him because he went to AA, you know. I was so mad. And he told me, he was like, you know, Dre, and he goes, because to be honest with you, I came into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous to save my marriage, straight up. I did not come here for me, to save what I had. And I ended up losing everything I had, you know what I mean, or giving it up. And he says, what happens if you know, she leaves you? What are you going to do? And I was like, I don't know. And but that morning I knew that I had to do this. You know what I mean? I knew I had to do this. And I got 15 minutes? Sweet. I thought I only had like 5. Oh, great. So... I knew I had to do the deal, and I woke up that morning, and I went to the Nooner at this clubhouse that I got sober at. And that weekend, and it was funny because I asked my brother before I came to Orlando. He was living in Orlando, and I asked him I needed the number to AA, so he got me Intergroup's number. As soon as I got to Orlando, I went straight to a meeting because I knew I needed you guys. I knew I needed this. And there was a guy there, and he came and talked to me. Make a long story short, I made him my temporary sponsor. You know, he was a country. That's why, like, people, you know, people come to the rooms and they're like, oh, I'm waiting for the right person. I'm waiting to pick this person or that person. He's like, just pick somebody, okay? Jeff was like a 6'2" country boy from Pensacola. We had really nothing in common other than we were drunks. You know what I mean? Like, he would call me Bubba, and everything had to do with a country song. You know what I mean? And like, Bubba, there's this country song. I want you to go home and listen to this country song. I'm like, what the? Country song, and you know what I mean, and go watch this movie, Bubba. And I'm just like, what the? And so and don't get me, like, we worked up the book too, but sometimes he thought, you know, God spoke to us through the country song and whatever. So he started working with me, and the first month getting sober, like, my life did not get better, it got worse. And I'm not gonna lie to you, my first year sucked. You know what I mean? Like, this head of mine, horrible. I couldn't sleep. I would seriously, like, I just could not sleep at all. And I would, I would start when I got sober. I started running. You know what I mean? That's what I did. I was like Forrest Gump. Picked up my magic shoes and I just started running. And that was the only thing that kind of calmed me down. And I would run and run and run. And I was training for a marathon. 4 months sober, I ran a marathon. And just going. And even with all that activity I was doing, I'd be up till 2 o'clock in the morning. You know what I mean? Because this wouldn't shut off. And it was like that for a year. It wasn't until about my 9th step that now, you know, I can turn on Friends and I'm out in 5 minutes today. And that sounds like... You laugh, but I mean that's the one of the best things that sobriety has given me. That I have a clear conscience now. You know what I mean? Like I know that I haven't hurt anybody today, like I used to. And we started working the steps, and like I said, step two, I got to get sane and I got to find this God, right? And like I told you, that God that I knew was this angry, vengeful God, and I couldn't get down with that. So I didn't know how I was going to stay sober with the God that I had, but I knew I needed God because you all told me I needed God. So I got to find this dude. So I'm at my brother's house. I walk up to this church, and that's right next to my brother's house, and that's where I found God at first. You don't have to find God there. I make that very clear because the God that I have now is not in a church. So I get there, and I knew I need God. So I talk to this pastor dude, and I'm like, yo, I'm a drunk. I don't know how I'm going to do this. And he points me in the direction of this guy named Steve. And Steve runs into like this thing at the church, like a discipleship group. And it was just so interesting because Steve had been sober for 13 years. And he got sober in AA first, and then he started working that. But he found, you know, other things that worked for him. But at first he came to AA. And the interesting thing there is that all those guys in there suffered from some type of addiction. You know what I mean? Whether it had been drinking, drugs, pornography, whatever. But the point of it is that I met with Steve, and Steve showed me a God that I didn't think existed. He showed me a God that loved me, that cared for me. And no matter all that shit that I did, you know, it was okay, because God still loved me for who I was. And that was my first relationship with a higher power, my first relationship with God. My sponsor told me always, he was like, Bubba, you know, you just need to have a relationship with God. That's all you have to do, Bubba. You know, if you can't pray, just get on your knees at night and thank him. And you get up in the morning and saying, oh God, it's morning. Say, good morning, God. Keep me sober. Okay, that's all you have to do. And that's what I did, and I still do today. You know what I mean? Like, I still do it today. And we worked through the steps. And what ends up happening around, I get scared around step four. And it's not because of step four itself, it was because of step five. Because at some point I'm going to have to tell somebody everything that I've done. You know what I mean? And so I kind of stumble on that. Like, it takes me about a month to do my fourth step. I do not suggest that to anybody. Do it. Get it done. If you're new, don't be afraid of it. Because your sponsor probably has done what you've done or worse. And my sponsor was worse, you know what I mean? And after everything's said and done, like, I had a book, you know, like, it was like that big. And we go to my sponsor's house, and we go out to his back porch. And, like, my biggest fear was, like, I'm going to tell him this thing, and he's just going to kick me out of his house. And so my idea was, I'm going to tell him that first, because if I'm going to get kicked out of this guy's house, then I'm going to get it done early, because I'm not going to, you know... And so I told him my darkest secret, you know what I mean? Like, oh my God, my darkest secret. And all he said was, you know, Bubba, I love you. It's okay. What's next? And we spent 6 hours out there, you know what I mean? It took a while. And he pointed out things to me, like how selfish and self-centered I was, how much of an asshole I was to people, you know what I mean? But he also pointed out to me that's all I knew at the time. Now we know different, and we're going to act differently. You know, because the fourth step, there's nothing to be afraid of. The book just says we're getting down to causes and conditions. Why did we do the things that we did? You know, if you look at it from a business standpoint, it's just like taking an inventory, like Bill says. You know, it's just keep it simple. Take an inventory. What's good? What's bad? Let's figure this out so we can move forward. You know what I mean? And something happened. The sky didn't open up or anything like that. But I walked out of his house and I was able to stand up a little bit straighter. You know what I mean? I didn't feel like this weight on my shoulders, you know, it was just like, and for once, I was able to go, and breathe. The replacement at that time is like maybe a psychic change, like it talks about in the book, but like that effect that alcohol gave me now is replaced with Alcoholics Anonymous and God, you know, and that's a good place to be at. And you know, we do six, we do seven. At the first, my first six and seven step, it was just kind of like, okay, just did what I did in the book. Now it's a little bit different as I've gotten sober and I stay sober longer. Like six and seven looks really different now. You know, that's where you make a lot of your money now. I make a lot of my money nowadays looking at, you know, how to that character building versus comfort. You know what I mean? Kind of like what's the best feeling I have? Like I was on a cruise and I was talking to my sponsor's Ryan. And I like watches a lot, you know what I mean? Like, I like things, but I really like watches, you know? And there was this watch, and this watch was just so beautiful. And, like, I was like, it was under $300. Like, clearly I ain't got the money for it, you know what I mean? Like, but I got a credit card. But it was the hardest thing for me not to buy that watch. Hardest. And what I point out to you is that's character building. Character versus comfort is the seventh step, and the sixth and seventh step in the 12 and 12, he talks about that, you know. But anyway, going back. So I get through that. Eighth step, I write them all down like it says in the book. Ninth, I go out and I start making amends. And this is where it starts getting good, you know. Because that hole that I tried to fill so many years with alcohol starts closing up. Because I start making things right that I have done, you know. And I start mending the relationships. Especially with my family, you know what I mean? And that brother that I talked about, we used to fight like cats and dogs. And, you know, before I went to his house, he told me, like, I never effing want to see you again. Like around like a few months before I got sober. And he took me in and he provided for me. I mean, he provided everything for me. Clothes, money, food, roof over my head. And that's only by the grace of God and Alcoholics Anonymous that relationship is fixed. And we have a really good relationship today. And I start making those amends. And about a year sober, I start going a little bit crazy. You know what I mean? And I can't figure out why. I'm doing everything, and I can't figure out why. And my sponsor, this kid comes up, 17 years old, and he's my first sponsor. He asked me to sponsor him. I go to my sponsor, and I'm like, yo, should I sponsor him? And he's like, yes, go. And so I sponsor him, and things start changing. You know what I mean? Things start changing. And to be honest with you, you know, the first year of sobriety was, like I said, crazy. But as of late, like, it's been real crazy. You know what I mean? Like, emotionally, my emotional sobriety, just to get, you know, how it was and where I'm at today, and things are real different. You know, I came to a point where I said that I know I needed God, to coming to a point in the program where I'm pretty much agnostic. I got to a point where I was agnostic. And I got mad at that idea of God. I had to change the idea of God, because the old ideas result in nil, so we let go absolutely. And unfortunately, sometimes in sobriety, that's our old things that we learned in sobriety. You know what I mean? But instead of changing my idea of God and working with that relationship, I decided to get a resentment at God. And it was all because I was ashamed of who I was. You know what I mean? I wasn't coming clean with some things. I thought I was being honest with my sponsor, and I was. But what I learned in this program is that secrets will keep you sick. Bottom line, I didn't believe that. But I'm here to tell you that it was. It's true for me. And my secrets were keeping me sick. And I came out with that secret, but something else was happening. And I think it was because I wasn't being honest, and I was ashamed of who I was because of that secret, you know. And I got to a point where I was sitting there running, and I was thinking about my higher power, and I was like, why would you, like, send your son down to heaven and, like, die for us? It didn't make any sense. Like, why would you be so mean? And this is just me, you know what I mean? Like, but all it was that vengeful, fearful God from my childhood coming back. And I was like, no. If you're going to be like that, I don't want to have anything to do with you. And for a year and a half from that point, you know what I mean? Like, I just started making mistakes. Not even mistakes, just like things I had to go through. It's just, everything was based on self. You know what I mean? Everything was based on self. And I get to the point where my other sponsor that I was with called me. Meet me at Starbucks. I need to talk to you. What? You know what I mean? And I'm like, okay, what? And so I meet him, and he basically sat me down, and he says, listen, if you don't start changing the things that you're doing right now, you're going to drink. And that woke me up. And I was like, I don't want to drink today. You know? I don't want to drink, and I don't want to die. And I started taking action again. You know what I mean? Because it's real simple. It's real simple. All we got to do is, you know, work these 12 steps, help others, you know what I mean, go to meetings. Like, how simple is that? But the thing is, I'm so selfish and self-centered that I don't want to do any of those things, you know. And what really was the idea of God, you know, the idea of God that was hard. And so I sat down with this lady. We were talking about her. Name's Heidi. She's like a pretty spiritual chick. And she said, you could find God on page 55. And I was like, really? And I've read this several times. I'm going to read it to y'all today. It says, yet we had seen another kind of flight, a spiritual liberation from this world, people who rose above their problems. They said, God made these things possible, and we only smiled. We had seen spiritual release, but liked to tell ourselves it wasn't true. Actually, we were fooling ourselves, for deep down in every man, woman, and child is the fundamental idea of God. It may be obscured by calamity, by pomp, by worship, or other things, but in some form or other, it is there. For faith in a power greater than ourselves and miraculous demonstrations of that power in human lives are facts as old as man himself. That changed my life. You know what I mean? Today, you know, now I have a God of my own understanding that's working for me. I didn't pick up a drink. I'm carrying the message. And most of all, I love Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, I see it in you. I see God in you guys every day. I see God in, like, nature. I see God again, like I did when I first got sober. And to me, that's exciting. You know what I mean? No matter what's going on in my life, I know that I can stay sober today as long as I have a God there that can love me, care for me, and know that no matter what I do, no matter what I've done, no matter what I'm going to do in the future, He's still going to be able to keep me sober one day at a time. With that, thank you for letting me share.